She looked away. It was easy to imagine that being George or Scotty or someone else she cared about and lost. It was easy to imagine it being herself. She shuffled toward the access stairs, her body wavering in the thick but crystal clear water, the weight of her boots and the buoyancy of her torso keeping her upright even though she felt on the verge of toppling. She paused at the top of the square steps leading down.
"I'm about to descend," she said, chin down. "Make sure you keep everything feeding, and please don't respond unless there's a problem. My ears are still ringing for the last time."
Juliet lifted her chin from the contact switch and took the first few steps, waiting for Solo to blare something in her ear, but it never came. She kept a firm grip on the wire and hose, dragging it around the sharp corners of the square stairwell as she descended into the darkness. The black water all around was disturbed only by her rising bubbles and the feeble cone of her sweeping, flashlit gaze. 6 floors down, the hose and wire became difficult to pull, too much friction from the steps. She stopped and gathered more and more of it around herself, letting the slack coil and drift in the weightlessness of the water. Several of her careful splices in both the wire and tubing slid through her gloves. She paused and checked the taped and adhesed joints of the ladder to see how they were holding up. Minuscule bubbles were trailing out of one joint. They left a perforated and wavy line of tiny dots in the dark water. It was hardly anything. Once she had enough slack at the bottom of the stairs to reach the sump basin, she turned and marched purposefully toward her work. The hardest part was over. The air was flowing in, cool and fresh and hissing by her ear. The excess streamed out through the other valve, the bubbles shooting up in a curtain whenever she turned her head. She had enough wire and hose to reach her goal and all of her tools intact. It felt like she could finally relax now that she knew she wouldn't be going any deeper. All she had to do was hook up the power lines, two easy connections, and make her way out. Being so close, she dared to think of getting free, of rescuing this silo's mechanical spaces, resuscitating one of its generators and then one of its hidden and buried diggers. They were making progress. She was on her way to rescuing her friends. It all seemed perfectly attainable, practically in her grasp after weeks of frustrating setbacks. Juliet found the sump room just where it was supposed to be. She slid her boots to the edge of the pit in the center. Leaning forward, her flashlight shone down on the numbers signifying how deep the waters had risen. They seemed comical under so many hundreds of feet of water. Comical and sad. This silo had failed its people. But then Juliet corrected herself. These people had failed their silo.
"Solo, I'm at the pump. Gonna hook up the power."
She peered down at the bottom of the pit to make sure the pump's pickup was clear of debris. The water down there was amazingly clear. All the oil and grime she'd worked hip-deep in at the bottom of her own basin had been made diffuse, spread out into who knew how many gallons of groundwater seepage. The result was crystal-clear stuff she could probably drink. She shivered, suddenly aware that the chill of the deep water was making its way through her layers and wicking away her body heat. "Halfway there," she told herself. She moved toward the massive pump mounted on the wall. Pipes as thick as her waist bent to the ground and snaked over the edge of the pit. The overflow ran up the wall in a similarly sized pipe and joined the jumble of mechanical runs above. As she stood by the large pump and worked the knotted wires off her wrist, she remembered the last job she'd ever performed as a mechanic. She had pulled the shaft on an identical pump and had discovered a worn and broken impeller. As she selected a Phillips driver from her pocket and began loosening the positive power terminal, she took the time to pray that this pump had not been in a similar condition when the power had blown. She didn't want to have to come down and service it again. Not until she could do it while keeping her boots dry. The positive power line came free easier than she had hoped. Juliet twisted the new one into place. The sound of her own breathing rattled in the confines of her helmet and provided her only company. As she was tightening the terminal around the new wire, she realized she could hear her breathing because the air was no longer hissing by her cheek. Juliet froze. She tapped the plastic dome by her ear and saw that the overflow bubbles were still leaking out, but slower now. The pressure was still inside her suit. There just wasn't any more air being forced inside. She dipped her chin against the switch, could feel the sweat form around her collar and drip down the side of her jaw. Her feet were somehow freezing, while from the neck up she was beginning to sweat.
Solo, this is Juliet. Can you hear me? What's going on up there?
She waited, turned to aim her flashlight down the air hose and looked for any sign of a kink. She still had air, the air in her suit. Why wasn't he responding?
Hello, Solo, please say something.
The flashlight on her helmet needed to be adjusted, but she could feel the ticking of some silent clock in her head. How much air would she have starting right then? It had probably taken her an hour to get down there. Solo would fix the compressor before her air ran out. She had plenty of time. Maybe he was gassing it up. Plenty of time, she told herself, as the driver slipped off the negative terminal. The damn thing was stuck. This she didn't have time for, not for anything to be corroded. The positive wire was already spliced and locked tight. She tried to adjust the flashlight strapped to her helmet. It was aimed too high. Good for walking, horrible for working. She was able to twist it a little and aim it at the large pump. The ground wire could be connected to any part of the main housing, right? She tried to remember. The entire case was the ground, wasn't it? Or was it? Why couldn't she remember? Why was it suddenly difficult to think? She straightened the end of the black wire and tried to give the loose copper strands a twist with her heavily padded fingers. She jabbed this bundle of raw copper into a cowling vent on the back, a piece of conducting metal that appeared connected to the rest of the pump. She twisted the wire around a small bolt, knocked the slack so it would hold, and tried to convince herself that this would work. That it would be enough to run the damn thing. Walker would know. Where the hell was he when she needed him? The radio by her neck squawked, a burst and pop of static, what sounded like part of her name in a faraway distance, a dead hiss, and then nothing. Juliet wavered in the dark, cold water. Her ears were ringing from the outburst. She dipped her chin to tell Solo to hold the radio away from his mouth, when she noticed through the glass window of her helmet's visor that there were no more bubbles spilling from the overflow valve and rising in that gentle curtain across her vision. The pressure in her suit was gone. A different sort of pressure quickly took its place. 13. Silo 18. Walker found himself shoved down the square stairs, past a crew of mechanics working to weld another set of steel plates across the narrow passage. He had most of the home-built radio in a spare parts tub, which he desperately clutched with two hands. He watched the electrical components rattle together as he jostled through the crowd of mechanics fleeing from the attack above. In front of him, Shirley carried the rest of the radio gear against her chest, the antenna wires trailing behind her. Walker skipped and danced on his old legs so he wouldn't get tangled up.
"Go, go, go!" someone yelled.
Everyone was pushing and shoving. The rattle of gunfire seemed to grow louder behind him, while a golden shower of fizzling sparks rained through the air and peppered Walker's face. He squinted and stormed through the glowing hail as a team of miners in striped coveralls fought their way up from the next landing with another large sheet of steel.
"This way!"
Shirley yelled, tugging him along. At the next level, she pulled him aside. His poor legs struggled to keep up with the running others. A duffel bag was dropped. A young man with a gun spun and hurried back for it.
"The generator room," Shirley told him,
pointing. There was already a stream of people moving through the double doors. Jenkins was there, managing the traffic. Some of those with rifles took up position near an oil pump, the counterweighted head sitting perfectly still like it had already succumbed to the looming battle.
"What is that?" Jenkins asked as they approached the door.
He jerked his chin at the bundle of wires in Shirley's arms.
"Is that..."
"The radio, sir,"
she nodded.
"Fat lot of good it does us now."
Jenkins waved two other people inside. Shirley and Walker pressed themselves out of the way.
"Sir,
get him inside,"
Jenkins barked, referring to Walker.
"I don't need him getting in the way."
"But, sir, I think you're going to want to hear..."
"Come on, go!"
Jenkins yelled to the stragglers, bringing up the rear. He twirled his arm at the elbow for them to hurry. Only the mechanics who had traded their wrenches for guns remained. They formed up like they were used to this game, arms propped on railings, long steel barrels trained the same direction.
"In or out?"
Jenkins told Shirley, starting to close the door.
"Go," she told Walker, letting out a deep breath. "Let's get inside."
Walker numbly obeyed, thinking all the while of the parts and tools he should have grabbed, things a few levels overhead now that were lost to him, maybe for good.
"Hey, get these people out of the control room!"
Shirley ran across the generator room as soon as they were inside, wires trailing behind her, bits of rigid aluminum antenna bouncing across the floor.
"Out!"
A mixed group of mechanics and a few people wearing the yellow of supply sheepishly filed out of the small control room. They joined the others around a railing that cordoned off the mighty machine that dominated the cavernous facility and gave the room its name. At least the noise was tolerable. Shirley imagined all those people being stuck down here in the days when the roar of the rattling shaft and loose engine mounts could deafen a person.
"All of you, out of my control room!"
She waved the last few out. Shirley knew why Jenkins had sealed off this floor. The only power they had left was the literal kind. She waved the last man out of the small room studded with sensitive knobs, dials, and readouts, and immediately checked the fuel levels. Both tanks were topped up, so they had at least planned that properly. They would have a few weeks of power, if nothing else. She looked over all the other knobs and dials, the jumble of cords still held tightly against her chest.
"Where should I?"
Walker held his box out. The only flat surfaces in the room were covered with switches and the sorts of things one didn't want to bump. He seemed to understand that.
On the floor, I guess?"
She set her load down and moved to shut the door. The people she'd hurried outside gazed longingly through the window at the few tall stools in the climate-controlled space. Shirley ignored them.
"Do we have everything? Is it all here?"
Walker pulled pieces of the radio out of the box, tisking his tongue at the twisted wires and jumbled components.
"Do we have power?"
he asked, holding up the plug of a transformer. Shirley laughed.
"Walk, you do know where you are right now, right? Of course we have power."
She took the cord and plugged it into one of the feeds on the main panel.
"Do we have everything? Can we get it up and running again? Walk, we need to let Jenkins hear what we heard."
"I know."
He bobbed his head and sorted the gear, twisting some loose wires together as he went.
"We need to string that out."
He jerked his head at the tangled antenna in her arms. Shirley looked up. There were no rafters.
"Hang it from the railing out there,"
he told her.
"Straight line. Make sure that end reaches back in here."
She moved toward the door, trailing the loops out behind her.
Oh, and don't let the metal bits touch the railing,
Walker called after her. Shirley recruited a few mechanics from her work shift to help out. Once they saw what needed doing, they took over, coordinating as a team to undo the knots while she went back to Walker. It'll just be a minute, she told him, shutting the door behind her, the wire fitting easily between it and the padded jamb.
I think we're good,
he said. He looked up at her, his eyes sagging, his hair a mess, sweat glistening in his white beard.
Oh, shit,
he said. He slapped his forehead.
We don't have speakers.
Shirley felt her heart drop to hear Walker cuss, thinking they'd forgotten something crucial. I'll wait here, she told him, running back out and to the earmuff station. She picked one of the sets with a dangling cord, the kind used to talk between the control room and anyone working on the primary or secondary generators. She jogged past the curious and frightened-looking crowd to the control room. It occurred to her that she should be more afraid like they were, that a real war was grinding closer to them, but all she could think about were the voices that war had interrupted. Her curiosity was much stronger than her fear. It's how she'd always been. Well, how about these? She shut the door behind herself and showed him the headphones.
Perfect,
he said, his eyes wide with surprise. Before she could complain, he snipped the jack off with his multi-tool and began stripping wires.
Good thing it's quiet in here,
he said, laughing. Shirley laughed as well, and it made her wonder what the hell was going on. What were they going to do? Sit in there and fiddle with wires while the deputies and the security people from IT came and dragged them away? Walker got the cones wired in, and a faint hiss of static leaked out of them. Shirley hurried over to join him. She sat down and held his wrist to steady his hand. The earphones trembled in them.
You might have to.
He showed her the knob with the white marks he'd painted on. Shirley nodded and realized they'd forgotten to grab the paint. She held the dial and studied the various ticks. Which one? She asked.
No.
He stopped her as she began dialing back toward one of the voices they'd found.
The other way. I need to see how many...
He coughed into his fist.
We need to see how many there are.
She nodded and turned the knob gradually toward the black, unpainted portion. The two of them held their breath, the hum of the main generator barely audible through the thick door and double-paned glass. Shirley studied Walker while she spun the dial. She wondered what would become of him when they were rounded up. Would they all be put to cleaning? Or could he and a few of the others claim to be bystanders? It made her sad, thinking what had been wrought of their anger, their thirst for revenge. She thought of how things could have gone so differently, how they'd had all these dreams, unrealistic, perhaps, of a real change in power, an easy fix to impossible and intractable problems.
A little faster,
Walker said, growing impatient with the silence. They'd heard a few hits of crackling static, but no one talking. Shirley very slightly increased the rate she spun the knob. You think the antenna? She started to ask. Walker raised his hand. The little speakers in his lap had popped. He jerked his thumb to the side, telling her to go back. Shirley did. She tried to remember about how far she had gone since the sound, using a lot of the same skills she'd learned in that very room to adjust the previously noisy generator.
Solo, this is Juliet. Can you hear me? What's going on up there?
Shirley dropped the knob. She watched it swing on its soldered wire and crash to the floor. Her hands felt numb. Her fingertips tingled. She turned, gaped at Walker's lap where the ghostly voice had risen, and found him looking dumbly down at his own hands. Neither of them moved. The voice, the name, they were unmistakable. Tears of confused joy winked past Walker's beard and fell into his lap. 14. Silo 17. Juliet grabbed the limp air hose with both hands and squeezed. Her reward was a few weak bubbles rolling up her visor. The pressure inside the tube was gone. She whispered a curse, tilted her chin against the radio, and called Solo's name. Something had happened to the compressor. He was probably working on it, maybe topping up the fuel. She told him not to turn it off for that. He wouldn't know what to do, wouldn't be able to restart it. She hadn't thought this through clearly at all. She was an impossible distance from breathable air, from any hope of survival. She took a tentative breath. She had what was trapped in the suit and the air that remained in the hose. How much of the air in the hose could she suck with just the power of her lungs? She didn't think it would be much, but she didn't know. She took one last look at the large sump pump, her hasty wiring job, the loose trail of wires streaming through the water that she'd hoped to have time to secure against vibration and accidental tugs. None of it likely mattered anymore, not for her. She kicked away from the pump and waved her arms through the water, wading through the viscous fluid that seemed to both impede her while giving her nothing to push or pull against. The weights were holding her back. Juliet bent to release them and found she couldn't. The buoyancy of her arms, the stiffness of the suit. She groped for the Velcro straps, but watched her fingers through the magnified view of the helmet and water as they waved inches from the blasted things. She took a deep breath, sweat dripping from her nose and splattering the inside of her dome. She tried again and came close, her fingertips nearly brushing the black straps, both hands outstretched, grunting and throwing her shoulders into the simple act of reaching her damned shins. But she couldn't. She gave up and shuffled a few more steps down the hallway, following the wire and hose, both visible in the faint cone of white light emanating from above her head. She tried not to bump the wire, thinking of what one accidental pull might do, how tenuous the connection was that she'd made to the pump's ground. Even as she struggled for a deep breath, her mind was ever playing the mechanic. She cursed herself for not taking longer to prepare. Her knife! She remembered her knife and stopped dragging her feet. It slid out of its homemade sheath sewn across her belly and gleamed in the glow from her flashlight. Juliet bent down and used the extra reach of the blade. She slid the point of the knife between her suit and one of the straps. The water was dark and thick all around her. With the limited amount of light from her helmet, and being at the bottom of mechanical under all that heap of flood, she felt more remote and alone, more afraid than she had in all her life. She gripped the knife, terrified of what dropping it could mean, and bobbed up and down, using her stomach muscles. It was like doing sit-ups while standing. She attacked the strap with a labored sawing motion, cursed in her helmet from the effort, the strain, the pain in her abdomen from lurching forward, from throwing her head down, when finally the exercise weight popped free. Her calf felt suddenly naked and light as the round hunk of iron clanged mutely to the plate steel flooring. Juliet tilted to the side, held down by one leg, the other trying to rise up. She worked the knife carefully beneath the second strap, fearful of cutting her suit and seeing a stream of precious bubbles leak out. With desperate force, she shoved and pulled the blade against the black webbing, just like before. Nylon threads popped in her magnified vision, sweat spattered her helmet, the knife burst through the fabric, the weight was free. Juliet screamed as her boots flew up behind her, rising above her head. She twisted her torso and waved her arms as much as she could, but her helmet slammed into the runs of pipes at the top of the hallway. There was a bang, and the water all around her went black. She fumbled for her flashlight to turn it back on, but it wasn't there.
Something bumped her arm in the darkness. She fumbled for the object with one hand, knife in the other, felt it spill through her gloved fingers, and then it was gone. While she struggled to put the knife away, her only source of light tumbled, invisible, to the ground below. Juliet heard nothing but her rapid breathing. She was going to die like this, pinned to the ceiling, another bloated body in these corridors. It was as if she were destined to perish in one of these suits, one way or another. She kicked against the pipes and tried to wiggle free. Which way had she been going? Where was she facing? The pitch black was absolute. She couldn't even see her own arms in front of her. It was worse than being blind. It was some new ability to see the nothingness, to know her eyes were working but somehow taking nothing in. It heightened her panic, even as the air in her suit seemed to grow more and more stale. The air. She reached for her collar and found the hose, could just barely feel it through her gloves. Juliet began to gather it in, hand over hand, like pulling a mining bucket up a deep shaft. It felt like miles of it went through her hands. The slack gathered around her like knotted noodles, bumping and sliding against her. Juliet's breathing began to sound more and more desperate. She was panicking. How much of her shallow breathing was coming from the adrenaline, the fear? How much because she was using up all her precious air? She had a sudden terror that the hose she was pulling had been cut, that it had been sawn through on the stairwell, that the free end would at any moment slip through her fingers, that her next frantic reach for more of the lifeline would result in a fistful of inky water and nothing else. But then she grabbed a length of hose with tension, with life, a stiff line that held no air but led the way out. Juliet cried out in her helmet and reached forward to grab another handhold. She pulled herself, her helmet bumping against a pipe and bouncing her away from the ceiling. She kept reaching, lunging one hand forward in the black to where the line should be, finding it, grasping, yanking, hauling herself through the midnight soup of the drowned and the dead, wondering how far she'd get before she joined them and breathed her very last. 15. Silo 18. Lucas sat with his mother on the thick jamb of the open server room door. He looked down at her hands, both of them wrapped around one of his. She let go with one of them and picked a piece of lint off his shoulder, then cast the offending knot of string away from her precious son.
"And you say there'll be a promotion in this?"
she asked, smoothing the shoulder of his undershirt. Lucas nodded.
"A pretty big one, yeah."
He looked past her to where Bernard and Sheriff Billings were standing in the hallway, talking in low voices. Bernard had his hands tucked inside the stretched belly of his coveralls. Billings looked down and inspected his gun.
"Well, that's great, sweetheart. It makes it easier to bear you being away."
"It won't be for much longer, I don't think."
"Will you be able to vote? I can't believe my boy is doing such important things."
Lucas turned to her.
"Vote? I thought the election was put off."
She shook her head. Her face seemed more wrinkled than it had a month ago, her hair whiter. Lucas wondered if that were possible in so brief a time.
"Oh, it's back on,"
she said.
"This nasty business with those rebels is supposed to be just about over."